The following program is part of the Inner Circle Podcasting Group. Go to innercirclecomics.com for more high-quality podcasts.
Doom Patrol. Negative Man. Elastigirl. Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Kaldao. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Welcome back to Waiting for Doom, the world's greatest and only podcast that talks about all things Doom Patrol related.
Yeah, it sounds like we're coming back from ad break. Hey, I'm Paul. You can find me on Twitter at reading_Hicks. And we've got an email, which is waitingfordoom@gmail.com. I'm smooth after a week off, aren't I? And we're on Facebook. What is Facebook, Mike? Can you explain that?
It's a social media site where people post stuff.
Oh, not familiar with that. And our many episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and podbean.com. And we're also part of the Inner Circle Comics tribe, harem. No, it's not really a harem.
Not a harem. God. Yeah, smooth. Yeah, real smooth. Hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarv. You can also find our Sentient Show Twitter account, Wilfred, who is at WFDPod.
Yeah, so we're back. We had a week off.
We did.
What did we do in that week?
We met up at Oz Comic Con here in Brisbane.
We met each other.
We did.
I saw the back of your head for the first time ever.
Can you put some context around that, please?
Well, okay. I have seen you on Skype. I've seen many, many pictures of you on Twitter pointing your finger at people.
Yes.
But I've never seen like anything pass behind your ears. So that was interesting to see.
Yeah,
you are a three-dimensional person.
I am indeed. As are you. Yes. So, yes, we got to hang out at Oz Comic Con last weekend here in Brisbane. What did you think of it, Paul?
The con, it was great. I mean, because it's a Comic Con, naturally no one was there to talk about comics. So I kept finding Greg Rucker sitting on his own, and I was just like, you're all mine, Rucker.
Yes.
So I chatted to Greg Rucker for probably about an hour and a half, and I had good chats with Nicholas Scott and Tom Taylor.
Hi, this is Tom Taylor, and I'm not working on Doom Patrol.
And even George's Genty, who I... I wasn't really into any of his stuff, but he was nice.
Yeah, there were some interesting guests they had there. What guests they did have there, you know, that were comic related. A lot of it was very pop culture and anime and cartoon and TV and film stuff there. So
yeah, so I mean, comics completely represented in outfits, but you know, like I can't imagine that. Why is Greg Rucker sitting there without a massive queue of people talking to him?
That is a good question.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I got a... now I have to say it. I got a book from Greg Rucker, which was the Kickstarter volume of Lady Saber and the Pirates of the Ineffable Ether, which is a name I don't want to say. Because I'm going to F and stuff it up.
Right.
And that was awesome.
Cool.
Yeah, I took along a book of mine to get signed, and then halfway through I forgot that it was my book and thought it was Moby's, so I got an autograph for Moby on one of my books.
Oh, no.
So now Moby has to find his copy and swap with me.
Oh, my God.
Well, I had a couple of books of Moby's with me. So.
Right. How nice for Moby. That was very good of you, Paul.
What about you? What did you think of it, Mike?
I did go to Oz Comic Con last year, and it was for me, it was a bit the same. Yeah, there's not a whole spotlight on comics as such. There's a good mix of gaming and cartoons and TV and film and that, which is fine, but... Yeah, I'd rather have something purely comics focused. But
there was 100% more Hicks at this one.
There was. That's true. That was a definite highlight. There was far more Hicksiness there this year. But as you say, it was great to talk to Greg Rucker and see Nicola Scott again, because I got to meet her there last year when she first talked about this secret project that she and Rucker were working on, which turns out to be Black Magic, which starts in October. From Image Comics, and you know, it was awesome.
No one believed you back then, and now.
Yeah, I tweeted it out. No one believed me. So it was great to actually see the art pages she had there as well, and I was very tempted to maybe buy some of her art, but I did not. So, but yeah, it was good fun. It was awesome to hang out with you and meet up. I wish I'd had more time available to spend with you, Paul, but it was still great to catch up and see the back of your head as well.
You were looking at my butt. What are you talking about?
I was not looking at your butt. Apparently we're all about the backs of heads on this show. I don't know why. So.
Do we want to talk about anything else in comics this week? Or is...
Well, what else have you been up to in terms of comics this week?
Nah, it's not really interesting. I won't bother.
I saw that you finished reading a certain Batman-related collection, and you were wondering it might be a jumping-off point for you.
Oh, yeah. I finished Batman Endgame, which is the latest collection from Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo. And talk about escalation.
Yeah, just a bit.
Escalation to the max. Mm. And it just ends at a nice point that I could, you know, I could just put on my shelf and not buy another Batman book. I just feel a bit like that. But I probably will. But, like, the... Let's be honest, the Oz dollar is going down the toilet fast.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. So Batman books, which I used to buy for about $20, are now costing me like $32. And that's really starting to hurt. And a lot of people say that comic collectors don't pay attention to what the dollar, you know, the cost of comics doesn't affect them. It affects me. Like I drop things when I can't afford things.
Yeah.
So for that price, for $32, I really want to get about 8 or 9 issues.
Mm-hmm.
Getting 6 issues, it's a bit unpleasant.
And trust me, as someone that buys single issues on a regular basis, I do pay attention to what it's costing me, because you're right, it's costing sometimes more than $6 for a single issue. You know, depending on where you're going, it's ridiculous. So I have been dropping things as well. I've had a fairly quiet week this week and the previous week as well. So and I've got things that'll be ending soon anyway. So it's all a bit of a downhill motion in terms of what I'm reading at the moment. So
But that's what was awesome this week. You know how there was a dearth of Doom Patrol podcast last week, like we didn't record.
Yes.
The universe compensated and Daly did his Secret Origins podcast, and he covered the Secret Origins annual number one, which includes the Doom Patrol. And he did that with Doug Zavisa, who does that fantastic Doom Patrol blog, who's a listener of ours. So that was really exciting. And that was, you know, they're so much smarter than we are.
Yes. Thanks, but Doug. And thanks, Ryan. We're now quitting. You've shamed us, basically.
We just have to focus on the wacky, because they've got the serious covered,
I think. Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, right. I did listen to that, and it was a really good episode of the Secret Origins podcast, so check them out for sure.
Yeah, and we did that promo. Mike recorded our promo and edited it, and that's in the app. So if you're listening to us and you want, you know, like a minute more of us, there's a promo in there.
And Wilfred speaks in it too. Wilfred for the first time.
Creepy.
Yeah, like a creepier Ultron. In like a menacing way, creepy.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Any other comic stuff? Or do I hear ticking?
I think that's ticking here. Yeah. Oh, okay. Look, behind you, at the back of your head, it's the Doom clock. So looking at the Doom clock for this week, it's telling us that the last book of a Doom Patrol series was issue 22 of volume 5 from the Giffen Clark run. It was cover dated July 2011 and went on sale May 4th of that same year. So it's been 4 years and 21 weeks since we last had a Doom Patrol book.
Gosh.
How's that make you feel, Paul? Just gosh.
That's a million lifetimes of bugs right there, isn't it?
Yes.
Generation upon generation of gnats come and go in that time.
Mm. The last appearance of the team, however, was only 7 weeks ago and in two different comics. We had All-Star Section 8 number 3, where the patrol made a cameo in the background of a huge meeting of all Justice League type heroes. And also in Justice League United number 12, we had a one-panel appearance of the team as Stargirl was talking Robot Man into joining her in the JLU's next mission.
So I'd just like to encourage any other creators working for DC, take the Doom Patrol challenge and work the Doom Patrol into your titles now.
Yeah.
I want to see the Doom Patrol in Batman 66. I want to see the... Oh, that's getting cancelled. Forget that. I want to see the Doom Patrol in Martian Manhunter, Midnighter, any other books? Do they publish other things?
I think they do a book about a man that dressed up like a bat.
Oh, the Man-O-Bat.
Man-O-Bat, yes. Man-O-Bat. Yeah, get him teaming up with them. Yeah, that'll be great. This week in Doom Patrol history, on sale on October 3rd, back in 2001, we had the first issue of Volume 3 of the Doom Patrol, which was the John Arcudi and Tan Eng Huat era.
Wow.
That was cover dated, December 2001, went on sale October 3rd that same year for the cover price of $2.50 US. And it was pretty much the return of the Doom Patrol, but in name only, because multi-billionaire Thayer Jost had bought the team name and managed to coax Cliff Steele out of retirement, I guess we can call it, to act as a team leader of a new team of young heroes by the name of Freak, Kid Slick, Fast Forward, and Fever. And it all kind of went downhill after that.
Though, good book.
Definitely one of the better eras of the Patrol's history. But yeah, that was quite a good first issue for that series. So yeah, so that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
Today on Doomsplaining, we're going back, all the way back to 1965.
Yes.
So we've got the Doom Patrol number 99, which is cover dated November 1965, but it actually came out on September the 2nd, 1965. Mm. So not too long ago in the past. what's special about this book, Mike?
Well, this issue has the very first appearance of Beast Boy, Garfield Logan.
And that means it's an absolute bitch to buy secondhand.
Thank goodness for Showcase Presents collections, then.
Yeah. Mm. So this is probably, I would say this is probably the most expensive issue of the Doom Patrol ever.
Is it?
I would say so.
Probably is. To be honest, I have not looked into it yet.
You don't own one?
I do not own one yet. I'm sure I'll get there one day. But now you've intrigued me. That's some homework for Mike. I will go and investigate.
I'll just look it up when I'm talking.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. All right, so anyway, the cover is by Bob Brown, and it shows a very interesting caterpillar dude with eyebrows, and the Doom Patrol are being webbed up, so Elastigirl, Larry, and Cliff are being webbed up by this caterpillar, and there's a giant sort of waspy thing flying at them. But over at the side it says, "New, and meet Beast Boy," and there's a picture of Beast Boy with a very freakish gorilla body with a normal head. So a lot going on in that. And this is a cover by Bob Brown, not the Greens politician.
Apologies to all our non-Australian listeners.
Anyway, it cost 12 cents back in the day, which would have been really good to buy like 50 of them and just put them in the cupboard.
Speaking of costs, I've just found a copy of this, which has been CGC graded at an 8.0, and they're asking $926 for that.
Ow.
Yes.
That's pretty hardcore.
Other gradings are sort of ranging between the 100 to, say, 300 mark. So it's a bit all over the place. But, yeah, pretty expensive.
Wow. That's expensive.
Yes. I guess I'll be saving up my coins. Anyway.
Anyway, so the lead story of this is written by Arnold Drake with art by the fantastic Bruno Premiani, and it's all been edited by Murray Boltonoff, which has a cool name. Anyway, so obviously the Doom Patrol needs some publicity or a bit of, you know, they're freaks, but they care what people think, so they've gone to do a performance in some stadium. I don't know why. Do you know why?
It's some community chest annual benefit thing. So I think they're there to help raise funds.
Raise funds. Well, that's nice of them.
It is. Yes. You know.
Good of the chief. Anyway, so their act involves Rita getting embiggened, and then Cliff is going to jump off her hand while Larry is on her hand as well, and Larry's going to unleash Negative Man and catch Cliff. But... you know, being the Doom Patrol, not everything goes to plan, and there's some TV broadcasting going on, and that interferes with Negman, and he starts to splutter, and Cliff is plummeting towards the ground, and at the very, like, his face actually hits the ground and collects a pennant that some kid drops, and Larry grabs him just as his face hits, and there's a crack noise, and... yeah, Cliff ends up with a pennant stuck to his face, which Larry thinks is really funny. And they all wave. And then as soon as they're off stage, Cliff starts to throttle Larry.
Yes.
So not happy, Cliff. So no. They really are dysfunctional in this book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Larry's complaining about Negative Man, saying it's actually a separate entity to me and, you know, blame him. And anyway, I never get any of these cheers. It's him who gets the cheers. I'm just a dude in bandages who falls over.
Which I found really interesting in this issue because, you know, this is the original run and it's the first sort of hints that Larry and Negman might actually be two separate things altogether.
Yeah, I wonder if Grant Morrison was reading this and had his little notepad next to it and wrote some notes down about that.
Maybe. I mean, Larry's always talked to Negman before, like when he's, you know, collapsed and he's said, "Go, Negman, go," on whatever mission they're on. But this is the first time we see Larry kind of voice some concerns about his relationship with this weird energy being.
Yeah, but as they're leaving the stadium, we see the thought balloon of some nefarious person who said, "There they are, the only obstacle between me and total domination of this city. But this is the moment I've been waiting for, to remove them with one swift sting." And this giant mechanical dragonfly flies at them.
Mm.
And inside we see a guy who's dressed as a bug. So. Yeah?
Yeah, there's a bit of a theme coming up here.
Yeah, so you know how Blue Beetle dresses like a bug and looks a bit silly?
Mm-hmm.
This guy takes it a bit further.
Yeah, so, a little bit.
Yeah. Anyway, so Cliff sees this dragonfly coming at him and leaps up to smash one of the wings, but his hands get melted, and then it blasts at Rita with its tail, and Rita... embiggens herself and pulls the wings off, but the body lands and sprouts out legs, and that start to electrify, and then the body starts to swell. So it's a bit of a transformer, isn't it?
A little bit, yeah.
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 Larry tries to save the day without turning into Negative Man. Which, how does that go? He pulls an axe out, and then they all get webbed up, and the media show up. Bloody paparazzi start taking photos of the Doom Patrol getting trapped.
Mm.
This guy leaves, the guy who's attacking them in the metal bug. He sprouts more wings and flies off. So there you go, pull the wings off and he sprouts more wings.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they take ages to get back to the headquarters because the chief has a copy of the newspaper by the time they get back.
Yeah, that's a little bit weird. Maybe that photographer made it in time for the afternoon edition. Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. And Cliff blames Larry and elbows him in the chest. Larry picks up a vase and smashes it on Cliff's head. This doesn't look good for our team.
No, it doesn't. Thank God they've got Rita there to be the voice of reason, telling them to stop it. Have you lost your minds? Both of you. Poor old Rita.
And the chief says, you know, while you're fighting with each other, this individual is preparing your own destruction. So the only thing he's after is the death of the Doom Patrol.
The chief's onto something.
Yes. Anyway, in part two, which is titled In the Spider's Parlor, Because I'm crap at this, I'll actually say the name of the first part, which was called The Deadly Sting of the Bugman.
There's that scene.
Da-da. Anyway, we see that he's repairing Cliff's hands, and the chief is. And meanwhile, outside in a desolate valley, outside the city, there's a metal ant's nest being constructed by someone. Mm. Could it be Bugman? Yes, it is. Spoilers. And he's constructing metal bugs, and he gets inside one, and then they all fly off while he's in this like caterpillar thing. And I love the next page because they hear that they're under attack, and Cliff runs out and he said, "I've been saving this for a rainy day," and he's carrying this massive girder. So he found a massive girder at some point and stuck it aside and thought this would be awesome to fight with someone.
In one of the many rooms of the patrol's headquarters, there's like a, you know, save it for a rainy day room. And yes, that's where he's put this giant girder steel storage girder. Room.
So he runs out and starts swatting giant bugs with this girder. It's really incredible. And they're smashing down around the place. And there's a carpenter ant bug metal one which starts eating their headquarters. That's not cool.
No.
And Rita starts attacking that. Then she gets sprayed by gas by Bugman in the caterpillar. And Larry, still not unleashing Negative Man, is leaping on the back and hitting Bugman's caterpillar with a hammer. And then it rolls up into a ball and he falls off and he gets run over. So he still gets to collapse, even if he doesn't.
Yeah, he collapses, but not in the cool way.
Yeah, and the bugs fly off with the Doom Patrol in tow as prisoners, all unconscious. And the chief is watching this on his monitor, not too big, just regular-sized monitor, and said, "I better get my action chair."
The action chair's back.
The action chair is coming soon.
Finally.
Yeah. Inside the metal anthill, which is controlled by Bugman, he's just being a bastard, isn't he?
Mm, yes.
Yeah, he sticks Rita in this box, which is designed to just keep shrinking. Mm. So she'll just have to keep shrinking until it will squash her. And he seems pretty sadistic, and he's quite enjoying watching this. Meanwhile, the chief is zooming over in his action chair, which is not flying. It's just got wheels. So
he's got some good speed in that thing.
Yeah.
He really is.
It's been redesigned. And he gets into the headquarters and he hears some noises and then he falls through a hole in the floor towards a furnace.
Mm.
But luckily the action chair has the giant claw out the back, which he zips out and it grabs onto the edge of the trap.
Phew.
Meanwhile, Rita is now in a box the size of a pop final box, I'm going to say.
Nice reference.
Nice reference.
I'll pay that one. I raced it, yes.
And the chief zooms in and Bugman sprays him with a sleep gas, but Chief is prepared and he sprays air to blow the gas back, and then his big claw grabs Bugman's insect armor thing that he's in,
mm-hmm.
but a giant ant grabs the chief's arms from behind. A metal ant, not a giant real ant.
No.
Yeah, Bugman is gloating. He's got the cube with Rita in it now, which has gone down to the size of a Rubik's cube, it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "If I can't kill her with this box because you're attacking me, I'll just open the door and squish her." And he opens the door, and Rita has found a bobby pin on the floor and uses it to stab him in the hand.
Of course.
Awesome. And then she embiggens herself and grabs him. Then they smash his headquarters up.
That's when Larry decides to finally start using Negative Man again. Yeah. And unleashes him to start destroying the giant metal anthill that Bugman's been hiding out in. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, and that's the end of the mission.
Hooray.
So, I've got to say, Bugman's pretty formidable. Like, he really gets the drop on the Doom Patrol, doesn't he?
He does. I've got to say, though, I'm a bit disappointed in the fact that this is one of those instances where the cover doesn't quite match what happens in the story.
Yeah.
When you look at the cover, you've got, you know, the team being webbed up by this weird talking centipede man thing.
Yeah.
And then,
like, he's literally a bug man on the cover, not a man who makes metal bugs. He's actually, he looks a bit like Mr. Mind from Shazam.
Yes, exactly. excellent reference once again. But yeah, when we get into the story, he's just a wacky dude that makes robotic bugs and is in a robotic bug suit, which is, I mean, that's still cool and all in terms of villainy, but I was kind of like, oh, he's not actually a mutant freak. He's he's just a freak. But yeah, it was a cool story. But he certainly gets a drop on them pretty quickly in the piece. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he's your basic inventor genius psychopath. So I don't know if he got any outings after this. Was that it for Bugman?
I think that was it for Bugman. Which is a shame because I don't think we ever find out exactly why he wanted to destroy the team. He just did.
I thought he wanted to just make his name and take over the city.
Probably, yeah. I mean, yeah. You're right. What more do you need when you're a villain? But yeah, as far as I understand it, Bugman never appeared again after this one story.
Bummer. So, all right, into the backup. It's
and
called
what a backup.
The Beast Boy. Yes. It's quiet night. The Doom Patrol have been out doing something. Maybe they've been dancing. I don't know. Anyway, they come back home and there's like a giant cat print near their headquarters. And then Rita spots a giant feather. And then they go inside and their place has been trashed. And everyone's spotting things. So it's Larry's turn. He spots a tuft of gorilla hair. How does he know it's gorilla hair? Anyway.
Comic book science. That's how.
Comic book science. Anyway, so Cliff decides to do a little drawing of the suspect. And he draws a bird, gorilla, elephant creature.
An eagle fanty gorilla is what he calls it.
Yeah, that's why you're the fighter on the team.
Yeah, for your drawing skills.
For your muscle. Yeah. So they decide to, they assume that whoever it is will come back.
That was a massive leap. that this mysterious creature is, of course, going to come back to their headquarters.
Yeah, it's not like the Blu-ray player's missing or anything. Anyway. So they all hide, and the doors open, and they've rigged up some booby traps. So they've got a giant cage door that slams shut on the window, and they see the shadowy shape. And then Cliff very cleverly has snapped off his arms and draped them across the floor with wires.
Yep. so he can still control them. Yeah.
So he grabs the legs of the intruder, and Rita does the giant hand thing. And traps the person under this giant cone that she just happened to get from somewhere.
I reckon that was in the room with the giant girder.
Probably. What's in that room? Girders and cones. Giant cones.
We call that the Dutch room. Anyway.
Anyway, and they lift off the cone and there's an angry teenager there wearing... bit of a jacket. He's got the hair slicked back. And, you know, because the Doom Patrol are a little bit older, they just call him a young teenage punk. And he gets offended and turns into a lion.
Of course.
And leaps at Cliff. And Cliff says, the bloody obvious, the kid's turned into a lion. Negman's not standing for this, so he unleashes... Larry is falling for this. Anyway. Larry does things. He falls over. Negative Man comes out. The lion turns into a kangaroo and hops around and avoids Negative Man. Rita embiggens her hand and grabs the kangaroo, and it turns into a fish.
Yeah.
So everyone's being sort of humiliated here, aren't they?
Just a bit, yeah.
Yep. They all leap for the fish, and they all end up tangled together. And they finally catch the intruder, and it's a young guy. He said... No one at school knows that he can change, and he's just out for a lark, isn't he? And they
just
say,
a bit.
And they say, you know, he looks normal, and then with the lights on, they see he's green. Yeah. And Cliff actually insults his haircut and says it's a greasy beetle haircut. He's wearing pointed Italian shoes.
Oh, my.
He's a bit of a hipster. Yeah, and then they realize he's there because he wants to join the Doom Patrol, and he's this is his ploy to get into the team. He's probably been learning from Mento.
How to Be a Jerk 101. Yeah.
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 And they basically tell him to bugger off.
Mm. Yeah. And it's actually interesting that Cliff is the one that gives him the name Beast Boy.
Yeah.
Mm.
So the kid leaves in a huff. Then we get the second part, which is called That Kid's Not So Green. Ah. And we see Beast Boy at school, and everyone's calling him Greeny and making fun of him, of his complexion, mm-hmm. which is pretty mean. Some girl comes to his aid and defends him, and he says, "Thanks, Jill," and tries to ask her out, and she's like, he's like, "Great, I can't even get a date because I look like a walking bowl of salad."
Mm.
Mm. Then suddenly the Doom Patrol are there in a open-top car to pick him up.
It's a step up from the van.
It is a step up from the van. and they grab him and say, "We've got a job at the annual Pioneer Day Parade." And we see the Pioneer Day Parade is going on when a helicopter shows up and thugs attack. So they're going to rob the parade. Mm. Because there's millions of dollars worth of jewelry at the parade.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's the crown jewels of the Duchy of Duesenberg. Doesn't sound made up at all.
And it seems a bit, I don't know about you, it seems a bit out of place at a parade.
A Pioneer Day
the
parade.
Efforts of the pioneers.
Yeah. Oh, just roll with it.
Okay, sure.
Okay.
Comic book anthropology.
Yeah. So the attacking robbers have gas guns, so they knock out the guards. The Doom Patrol arrive, and they've got an oil gun, which makes them all slip.
Oh, no.
And it's banana oil, apparently. But Beast Boy is with them, and that's a dynamic that people aren't prepared for. He turns into a bird with a kid's face, which is weird.
Yep.
And picks up one of the guys and drops him into a cannon, which is mm-hmm. one of the floats. And he's about to get shot, but Negman disrupts the shooter. Then he turns into a gorilla and grabs one of the guys and carries him up over one of the fort things and drops him in there. Yeah, but these crooks are prepared, and they've got a gun that stops Cliff in his track and puts foam all over his face. And then Beast Boy turns into a dog and bites the last remaining attacker. And yeah, so the Doom Patrol have foiled this crime, and Beast Boy is pretty proud of the way he's behaved.
Well, basically, he saved their butts.
He saved their butts, and the Doom Patrol aren't exactly nice to him.
No.
So it's sort of left up in the air whether he can join the team or not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do like the line that Robot Man says, "We listen to this kid blow his horn. He sounds like a duet between Al Hurt and the Angel Gabriel." So that's really tooting your own horn. Yeah.
Yes, and a bit of 60s references there.
Mm, yeah, I love a bit of Al Hurt. He might even end up being the outro music this week.
Oh, you go, Mike. So I was interested. I'd never read this story before until mm-hmm. preparing for this episode. And I know, like, I'm very familiar with Beast Boy from the Titans, and he's a smart mouth kid who I would characterize his insecurity makes him more outgoing.
Mm.
Yeah. So yeah. It was interesting to see that was there in his very first appearance. So,
yeah.
You know, quite well defined character.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he has a bit of an arc on his way into the Doom Patrol, doesn't he?
Yeah, just a bit. Yeah, it was an interesting first appearance, and he was used quite creatively. So it was funny how, yeah, he started out in a backup story in this comic from the 60s, and he's admittedly, you know, one of the more popular Titans to this day still.
Yeah,
so, which is great. So
every morning you can turn on the TV and see him.
True. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hmm. Over to you, Mike.
Okay, so the next issue we're looking at is issue number 100.
Now, they went all out with an anniversary issue, didn't they?
I guess.
They didn't in any way at all.
Right, I wondered where you were going with that. Yeah, yeah, I think they got an updated logo on the front cover of the comic. That was about it, really. Reader's fighting a dinosaur on the cover. That's always cool.
That is cool.
Yes. So yes, this was cover dated December 1965, went on sale October 21st of 1965 for the insane price of 12 cents for 32 pages.
Sweet.
How awesome was that? Oh, God, those were the days. So the first tale in this issue is actually the fantastic origin of Beast Boy. We open up and once again, he's returned to the Doom Patrol's headquarters, and so what's he do? He starts damaging the place again as he turns from one animal form to the next, causing havoc and referring to them as the Goon Gang, and Cliff's ready to punch his lights out, except he changes into a frog and gets away. And then, for whatever reason, he turns into a tiger. And lots of, yeah, and once again he turns into a fish. He's just causing havoc and chaos everywhere.
I'm quite disturbed by the fact that he turns into a moth.
That's why I wasn't going to mention it, Paul, because I know you and moths. Anyway, voice of reason, Rita, she steps in and breaks up the fight once again. And the chief is saying, "Now look, boy, we told you before, there's no room for you in the Doom Patrol." And he's basically saying, "Well, look, there's nowhere for me to go. I don't want to go home, you know." And if
they didn't actually tell him that last time.
Well, no, that's the thing. They just sort of wrapped it up, and you know, he said, "You know, Beast Boy said, if you're ever in a jam, give me a jingle." And they were kind of like, "Okay, kid, see you later."
Yeah,
that was it. But we learned that Beast Boy is actually the ward of a man by the name of Nicholas Galtry, who is an evil looking man. He just looks like a villain.
A villain. And we also learned that Beast Boy's name is Craig.
Yeah. Because I believe that's the first time we actually see his name, unless the school kids mentioned it in the previous issue. And
no, it wasn't mentioned.
I missed that. No, he was just called Greeny, and even Jill. Jill referred to him as Gar.
Gar.
The girl that he was trying to ask out.
Okay, why is he called Craig and Gar? Like, we know him as Gar Logan today. Mm. That's his, Garfield Logan is his name.
Yes. Maybe that's how evil Galtry is, that he wants to call him
Craig.
So rude, he gets his name wrong. So anyway, Galtry says, "Look, I've been talking to this Dr. Weir who is going to help look into your odd skin condition as to why you've got green skin." What Beast Boy doesn't know is that Galtry's been offered $10,000 for this to happen.
That's a lot of money in 1965.
Yes.
When
a lot of money.
12 cents.
Yeah. So the following day, Craig or Gar, or let's just call him Beast Boy, he goes off to Dr. Weir's lab. There's a gigantic, bizarre, quote-unquote, analyze machine that is, you know, spinning around and making him kind of dizzy. And then next thing you know, Beast Boy wakes up and says, "Oh, that only took a couple of minutes." And the doctor says,
it's worth noting there's actually an individual who talked to his care, a foster person, mm-hmm. who's called Daltrey, and there's a Dr. Weir. And if they're on the same page and they look exactly the same, except one is wearing glasses.
Yes.
They're both bald men with the same expression on their face.
Yes. Mysterious mysteries. So, as Gar's leaving the lab, he realizes that he hasn't actually only been there for a few minutes. He's been there for more than 3 hours. And he starts panicking, and he checks that he's still got this cylindrical charm on a necklace hidden under his shirt. And he says, "Okay, that's cool there. It's still there. It's all good. It's all good." But the next day, weird things start to happen, and that a small lizard is found on the streets by a security guard. And then next thing, it's vanished and been replaced by something that's left a footprint the size of a dinosaur print and destroyed a building.
What?
Yes, I know.
How's that possible?
Well, that's what the chief is wondering when the footprint taking is delivered to him. And he said, you know, whatever made this print should have died 200 million years ago. So this can't be happening. So he sends a team to investigate. Of course, there's a giant dinosaur causing havoc in the middle of the city, knocking over tanks, knocking over cars. When they send the jets in to fight dinosaurs, as you know, of course, that's a logical thing to do.
Yeah, sending the jets, yeah.
Sending the jets. There's a pterodactyl, of course. So all hell's breaking loose. The chief has also sent Negman to try and find Garfield because they're a bit worried about him as well. So as he's doing that, Rita and Cliff are taking on the dinosaur. Cliff uses his arm, which he detaches, to hold the dinosaur's mouth open while he throws a grenade down the dinosaur's mouth.
Cliff he's got the taste for taking his arms off now in fights. Yes. It's his new thing.
Yes.
He's like, that was sweet in the last issue. I'm going to do it again.
And I'm also going to end this part of the story with an exploding dinosaur.
You see its head blowing off.
Yeah, we see a dinosaur head flying off.
It's like a Diplodocus or something. It's not like a Tyrannosaurus.
Ah, dear. So, the next part of the origin cuts back to the headquarters. They think that somehow Beast Boy is involved. Cliff is pretty much throttling him.
Very reasonably threatening him. Yeah,
yes, nice. Yes. And he's saying, you know, start talking. We reckon you're up to something and you know it. Rita steps in as a voice of reason once again. And it turns out that Beast Boy's father was a medical doctor who specialized in biological research. He, his wife, and young Garfield were living in West Africa where they were carrying out their experiments. The young child actually ended up getting horribly sick with something that the natives called Sakutia, which was a fever related to malaria with no known cure. Not a single recorded case of a human surviving. So this is where we get into comic book science land, and Beast Boy's father says the only thing that can survive this is the West African green monkey. So somehow yeah, they're going to use their giant ray machine, which they have in their their laboratory slash home.
Like scientists have invented a giant ray that turns people into green monkeys.
Yes. Well, even better, they move their son back through the evolutionary chain and transform him into a green monkey. And they left him in that form for 24 hours for the sickness to pass from his body.
Wow.
When they restored him to a normal boy, or what they hoped would be a normal boy, his skin was still green. He was climbing trees like a monkey. He saves his mother from a snake attacking her by transforming himself into a mongoose. And there's a really cool fight scene between the mongoose and the snake.
A green mongoose and a snake.
Yes. So young Garfield is quite happy that he saved his mother, and his father comes along and says, "That's great, but you've got to learn to keep this a secret, you know? That if the world can't know about your fantastic power."
Oh, the old Pa Kent defense.
Yes. And young Garfield says, "Yes, Daddy, it means I mustn't change into a pretty bird or a lion or anything when somebody's watching." So, you know, the kid's learned his lesson.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the rain season hits and it was the worst ever. Their entire camp was washed away and his parents basically plummeted to their death in a waterfall.
Gar or Craig or Beast Boy turn into a bird and watch them die.
Yes. Sad. And they're saying to him, "Go, save yourself." And he's like, I don't want to.
Yeah. But this story does actually turn the Doom Patrol a little bit sympathetic.
Yes. They're a bit more
friendlier. Cliff still feels bad. He's like, no.
Yeah, Cliff says, "You got a bum rap, kid."
Ugh. And Rita seems a bit maternal, doesn't she?
Just a bit, yes. Yes. Yep. She says, "Oh, you poor child. You poor child." So they're trying to figure out what his relation to these reappearance of the dinosaurs are, and they figure out that what's in the capsule on the necklace that he's wearing contains a key which leads to a bank vault which has his father's research in there.
Ah.
So it lets people mess around with the evolutionary chain. So
what? So you could like turn a lizard into a dinosaur?
By Jove, you've got it, sir. So we cut back outside and what do you know? There's another dinosaur rampaging, except this time it's got Dr. Weir riding it with these insanely huge goggles, which seem to power it because he grabs a bird, stares at the bird with these goggles, and that turns into a pterodactyl. So, comic book science. So the team go on the offensive. They've got Beast Boy by the side. He transforms himself into a giant mammoth to take out the dinosaur.
The whole time he's been turning into these different animals, Beast Boy, his clothes appear when he's a person.
Mm.
And there's a little bit of explanation saying, Cliff says, "Hey kid, when your body changes, how come your clothes disappear?" He said, "They don't. Emanations from my body give the clothes natural camouflage. They match my skin."
Yes.
That's a great explanation.
Yes.
Oh, emanations. Right.
Comic book science.
Comic book science all over the place on this
yes.
one.
Yes. So then...
But good fight. I mean, you get to see Cliff Steele chuck an anchor at a dinosaur.
That was pretty cool, yeah.
That's sweet.
Spinning around and yeah, getting around the dinosaur's neck. Just then, a T-Rex turns up. So what does Garfield turn himself into? Tsetse Fly.
Tsetse Fly,
yeah. Tsetse Fly, yes. And he gives a T-Rex the worst case of instant sleeping sickness on record.
Sweet.
That's pretty clever, kid. They capture the insane Dr. Weir. They realize that, yes, Dr. Weir and Durling, his assistant, were the same person. Imagine yeah. that. The bald man that was giving the money to Galtree turned out to be the doctor that hypnotized Garfield. Or Craig.
I think in the early appearance of Durling, they like forgot to draw his hair on in one scene, which kind of gave it away.
Yeah, there are a few continuity errors in this story, really.
Yeah.
So they've saved the day. They've got rid of the dinosaurs. But unfortunately, Chief says, "I'm sorry, boy. We haven't the legal right to keep you here. Only your guardian has." So he leaves.
And he's
says,
a scumbag. They don't know that.
So he says, "You're sending me back to that creep. Okay, but someday you'll believe me." And Rita's, you know, voicing concern. Some concern that yeah she. Because Cliff says that the kids are writing a scrap, but he's trying to con us about that guardian of his. And Rita says, "Are you so sure he's lying, Cliff? I'm not, but we'll see." So, and that's, yeah, this is where we start to see Rita's real maternal side start kicking in. So,
yeah. Sweet origin, Mike.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. There's weird dinosaurs appearing and, you know, an interesting way that Garfield got his powers. So... What did you think of that story?
Oh, I think it's pretty good. Mm. Yeah. Anytime you can get Bruno Premiani to draw dinosaurs and have Rita fight them and Cliff and all that, it's all good. It's awesome.
Mm.
Totes rate it, mate.
Totes rate it?
Totes.
Cool. The backup story in this issue is actually a retelling of Robot Man's origin.
Yeah.
Except it goes into more detail about what happened, and it shows us, you know, Daredevil race car driver Cliff Steele having his accident. We then see this mysterious figure in a wheelchair putting his brain into a robot head after the accident. And basically the story shows us that Cliff did not deal well with waking up after the accident at all.
Cliff goes totally Burko and smashes everything inside and...
Yeah.
Tricks people and escapes and smashes gates and climbs bridges and chucks girders at planes.
Smashing statues. And right at the end of the story, we see a baseball game in process. And he's gone in and pulled out all the power supply cords and is now putting the power through himself. And he's threatening to melt down the entire stadium and
mass
everyone
murder.
In it. So yeah, he's kind of lost the plot.
Yeah.
So, thankfully, at the very end of it, the chief turns up because he's feeling remorse about what he's actually done, and that, you know, he's responsible for Cliff's madness. And the cops and the chief turn up at the stadium, and the cops are basically threatening to shoot Cliff in the head because they know that's where his human brain is. But the chief's like, "No, you've got to give me one chance. Just." You've got to.
And it's a cliffhanger ending.
It is.
Continued in the backup of the next issue.
Mm.
Dun,
so,
dun,
yeah, that was that was interesting to see how badly Cliff dealt with it all.
He really didn't take it well. He's
no.
Like, he just went on a rampage.
Yeah, because like when he wakes up in the bed, he can't control his body at all, and he falls to the floor, and he gets a glimpse of himself in the mirror, and he says, "That can't be me. It's not human. It's some Hollywood monstrosity, but not me." And yet he soon after that figures out how to control this body and goes on a rampage. What did you think of that story?
Well... I think I remember that he went a bit, he had a little bit of adjustment, but I didn't realise it was so full on.
It was bad. Yeah, but yeah, it's interesting to see, because I can't recall, maybe just because it's been a while since I've read them, but I can't recall if Rita and Larry actually got a spotlight story showing them to this level of detail before they met the chief or before the team was formed. So
well, we will find out, I'm sure.
But overall, what do you think of these two issues?
Good fun stuff. I think if you were seeking the first appearance of Beast Boy, you'd be pretty happy with it because you know, it's very clearly the first appearance of Beast Boy.
Yes. But yeah, good fun stories. I mean, some of the better ones. It's a bit of wackiness. It's funny how they're I found it kind of funny that they're introducing such a young teen character into the team. I wonder why they chose to do that at that point. Whether it was...
It's all about the demographics and the sectors, Mike, I reckon.
Yeah. I was wondering that as I was reading it. So, but yeah, it was a good fun story. Yeah.
I like to imagine that Bruno said to Arnold, "I want to draw some animals." And he just, all right.
And Arnold said, sure, but here's how it's going to happen.
That's it. Doom's playing.
Mm.
Time for the mailbag of Doom. Last week we asked people for the question of the week for this week. Who is your favourite addition to an already established comics team? And didn't we hear from people?
We did, yes.
Yeah. We heard from Nicholas, who's at NickRDE on the Twitter, and he said Captain America. Most think he founded the Avengers. He did not found the Avengers. He joined the team after he was unfrozen, didn't he?
Well, that's the thing. I didn't even think of that. And that would have been in the comics too, so it didn't even occur to me at the time. So, yeah.
It's like the movie, isn't it?
We heard from Bobgar Ornelas at Slimmer on Twitter, and he said, Brainiac 5, Brainiac 5, Brainiac 5, Brainiac 5, Brainiac 5, hashtag LOSH, Legion of Superheroes, I'm guessing.
He said Brainiac 5 five times, which... must be some sort of magical thing.
Oh, I hope Brainiac 5 is not going to appear in my house now.
Awkward. No, I like a bit of Brainiac 5. He's a good character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, smart, cool. Arrogant, a bit like me.
Right.
Except without he's smart. Anyway, we heard from... this is at Ostrakas, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Evil Tick Meter Wank is the name that he's going by at the moment. Anyway, he said, Terra joining the new Teen Titans since it ended in the Judas contract, which is my favourite comic story of all time. Now, I won't give away what happens with Terra, but she meets her demise in the Judas contract. So.
Well,
there's a hint of betrayal in that title. I'm
glad you didn't give away what happens.
I won't spoil that she is actually evil.
Right.
And betrays the Titans.
Okay. But you're not going to give away what happened.
I'm not going to give that away.
Right. Good.
It's a good story.
Okay. At Fractures, who this week is going by the Twitter name of Ninjak Frack, he said, Mwahahaha, too easy, Mento. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. You're not going to win points with us for that.
Nah.
We have from Moby1, who's at Shmoby1. And he said, Starfire joining New Teen Titans? Blue Beetle or Firestorm joining Justice League? Slap said, silly me, of course. Fractures, it has to be Mento.
Whatever, guys.
Yeah. Happy little jokes.
Yep. No ponies for you two. No ponies for anyone. Chris Hogan at Unlikely Nerd said off the top of his head, without putting much thought into it, he'd say Spider-Man on both the Fantastic Four, the Hickman run, and the Avengers. Yeah. Mm. Spidey's always good value when he's helping another team out. Yeah.
Yeah. We have from Martin Gray, who's at Martin Gray, and he said, Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch added spice to the Avengers, and every team needs Europeans. And he had the hashtag Wanda My Sister. Yeah, good one, Martin.
Susan Canary at Black_Canary02, she said, loved it when they added Lady Blackhawk to the Birds of Prey. She was a lot of fun, and they didn't have to fake a pilot. That's always
handy. Great answer.
Yeah.
Zinda joining the Birds of Prey was excellent. So, yeah, I'm glad she mentioned that.
Cool.
We heard from Richie O'Hara Beamont, And he said, would Casey Jones teaming up with the Turtles count? And he said, if not, I'd have to say Jenny Sparks joining Stormwatch. Yeah, both.
I think both count, yeah.
Yeah, good one. Yeah. Now, because we appealed for more answers, we got more answers from the people who have already given it answers. So.
Yeah. So, oh, look, it's Ninjak Frack again.
Again.
Fractures. And, oh, look, a sensible answer. He said, I always thought that Spidey was a good fit in Hickman's FF. Yeah.
Yeah. Sweet. We heard from Martin Gray again. And he said, the addition of Joe Sinnott to Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. Then he put in a picture of Scott Fisher from the Doom Patrol.
Oh.
I don't know why I did that. Anyway.
I'll have to follow up with Martin as to that Joe Sinnott, Stan Lee, Jack Kirby reference.
Yeah, I don't know my Marvel history that well.
I'm sure Martin will enlighten us.
Yep.
Meanwhile, over on the Facebook page, we actually heard from a new listener. Yes, we heard from a new listener, Steve Gurney. Hi, Steve. And he said, Captain America in Avengers number 4, probably the single most important addition to a super team.
Oh, that didn't stick. Captain yeah. America isn't really associated with the Avengers much. So.
Right. Right. Sure. Yeah. We'll have words later. I'll bring you up to speed. Yeah.
Getting in just under the wire, we had Rifty.
Oh, yes.
At Rift1821. Mm-hmm. And he said, Archangel to the X-Men due to its close ties with the best bad guy of all time, Apocalypse. Mm-hmm. And then he added a little bit of cinematic commentary in the, and I know the movie is going to suck.
Right. Good to know.
Now we had an email from Dr. Ange. That's never happened before. You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Good, good.
Sorry, I was just stunned that we got an email from Ange. I was like,
No, we love the emails from Ange.
Yes, anyway. Ange, you're awesome. You are the man.
Okay. First off, thanks for covering all the Doom Patrol books. Well, we haven't done it yet, but we will. I have almost none of the Arcudian Burn run, so I'm interested in hearing about those. But revisiting these Kupperberg books has been a blast. Ah, Rhea, swoon. As for the question of the week, heroes joining teams is one of my favourite sorts of stories. I especially liked it with the old JLA when a special panel showing the certificate the heroes got was part of a story. See attached when Zatanna joined. And he included a picture of Zatanna joining the JLA. And she's wearing a pretty foxy outfit there, isn't she?
Is that... I'm looking at... And I think that's even pre-bug on the head Zatanna.
Yeah, no, she's wearing like a black thing with a boob window.
Okay. Mm,
and a bit of a red collar thing going.
Yeah.
I approve. anyway, but for me, the best hero to join a team was when Polar Boy joined the Legion. He tried in the past, he was rejected. He formed the Legion of Substitute Heroes. He kept the team together and made them a decent team. That resilience, that determination, that compulsion to do good that was so ingrained that he did all that with the subs was brilliant. So seeing him finally call on the Legion to recognise his accomplishments and meet him was great. And seeing him shine as a full-fledged Legionnaire was fantastic. His stories are great, showing how these comic characters can grow and evolve over time. Thanks again for the great show. And include the picture of Polar Boy walking in and telling the Legion to let him join. So, yeah, there's some really good Polar Boy stories. And I get a bit weird when I think about the Legion of Substitute Heroes because it's one of those ideas that just is really cool.
And right.
Everyone who isn't a Legion person just goes, what are you talking about, man?
So what are you talking about? No, thank you, Ange. That was a great letter. And thanks for listening, as you always do. So much appreciated.
Okay, yeah. Mike, you got an answer?
You go first. I'm still thinking of mine.
Okay, I really liked it when Nightshade joined the Suicide Squad.
Okay.
Yeah, because she became an important part of the team and it was transport and things like that.
Right.
Because she could open portals through a very scary dimension that she would move the team through.
Okay.
And she was one of the few on the team who wasn't a criminal. So I liked it when she was there. So Right. Good stuff. And one day you will read these stories, won't you, Mike?
The one John day, Ostrander yes. Sure.
Suicide Squad run. Yeah.
Right after you read all the John Byrne Doom Patrol.
Hey, I've started. I've got three of them.
So, oh, well, only what? 15 to go?
15 to go.
15. For my answer.
66 Suicide Squads to.
Right. Okay. For my answer, I honestly couldn't really think of one. Oh. From back in the day. I mean, there's always stuff like, you know, Crazy Jane joining the Doom Patrol, but they weren't really that much of a team when she joined, and it was all a bit over the place. I guess I'll go for a more recent event in the New 52 with Shazam joining the Justice League, because he's kind of this kid that's just, you know, can't believe he's working with these superheroes. he's quite like, holy cow, this is really happening. And, you know, I'm in the Watchtower with the Justice League, but what you need is a computer game console. So, you know, him hanging out with Cyborg, playing video games while they're waiting for missions. That was kind of cool. So, but yeah, his sort of wide-eyed wonderment at being a big-time superhero now is a bit, I find it amusing and interesting. So, but yeah, I actually found that question really tough this week. I was racking my brains. Couldn't think of one that I really enjoyed that much. So, well done.
Right. Yeah. Okay, we should play that promo for Secret Origins podcast.
Yes, let us do that thing now.
Let us naturally insert it into the show.
I shall press play on my boombox.
Do you want to hear the origin of Superman or Batman? Of course not. You're listening to a Geek Culture podcast. You know the origins of Superman and Batman. You've always known them. Your unborn grandchildren know the origins of Superman and Batman. But what about Guy Gardner, Blue Beetle, or the Phantom Stranger? What about Firestorm, Sandman, or the Golden Age Fury? Those are just a few of the stories covered in the Secret Origins podcast, a review show dedicated to the Secret Origins comic published by DC in the 1980s. Each episode of the Secret Origins podcast features me, Ryan Daly, and an all-star collection of guest hosts revealing or revisiting the legends of the DC superheroes and villains. And if you're already sick of hearing my voice on this promo, the good news is at least 50% of the talking on the Secret Origins podcast is done by a terrific guest from the podcast and blogging community. So check out the Secret Origins podcast, available on iTunes and at secretoriginspodcast.wordpress.com.
Okay, everyone, that's it for the show. Don't forget, you can contact us on Twitter. You can get in touch with Wilfred at WFDpod. There's always email at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. The Facebook page, whatever that is, Mike, Facebook, yep, it's a thing.
You're such an old man.
I think of myself as a retro futurist.
Anyway, right.
Next week on the show, I think we're going to head back to Grant Morrison Town.
Mm.
Population us. And
we'll and all our listeners.
And the listeners.
Yes.
Ooh. All of us, yes. Mm. Together we will go there. No, and so we'll do issues 37 to 39,
mm-hmm.
Which is the Doom Patrol's Adventures in Space from Volume 2, mm. 37 to 39. Yes. So that's in the trade down Paradise Way, or it's halfway through the Omnibus if you had that, or it's on Comixology, so if you fancy getting it that way.
Yes, join us in reading these adventures next week.
Yeah, smooth. and our question of the week next week is... Who's got the best silhouette in comics?
Wow. Now, I thought this week's question was hard. That question, oh, man.
Really?
Best silhouette in comics.
Really?
Yeah. There's either so many choices or you're just kind of going, really? Silhouette? Really? Oh, dear. Anyway, any other parting thoughts for us this week?
No.
Excellent. That's our show for this week then, folks. Thanks
I'm
for
not,
joining
I'm
us.
Not good with the witty sign-offs.
Okay, that's fine. You're a retro futurist. We will catch you all again next time. See ya.
Bye.